Chapman, United USA Cleaning versus Federal Mine Safety Agency. Mr. Hendricks.
May it please the Court, my name is Brian Hendricks. I represent the petitioner in this matter, USA Cleaning. With me at counsel's table, I have Daniel G. Wills. USA Cleaning Service and Building Maintenance is a very small sole proprietorship in Logansport, Indiana. It provides janitorial services to a couple of different types of companies. In this case, or specific to this case, to the SROC Cement Corporation's Logansport Cement Plant. Its employees have been providing these services to the cement plant since the late 1950s, since 1959. In January of 2011, an MSHA inspector conducting a regular inspection of the SROC cement plant indicated to USA Cleaning and to SROC that the individuals, these janitors employed by USA Cleaning, were minors under 30 CFR Part 46 and were required to receive 24 hours of comprehensive new miner training. This came as somewhat of a surprise to USA Cleaning and to SROC. SROC contacted the inspector, contacted the inspector's supervisor, contacted senior MSHA personnel, senior management at MSHA, the Mine Safety and Health Administration, and contacted the office solicitor to explain why it was that any enforcement action based on that interpretation would be contrary to 30 CFR Part 46 and to the Mine Act.
Could I just break in and ask you this question. Right. How is the legislative history for EHAA materially different from the legislative history that was addressed in Buchanan, which was held insufficient to support the catalyst rule?
I believe in Buchanan, Your Honor, that Buchanan involved a different statute.
It did, but it, you know, we held that there's a strong presumption that Buchanan would apply to any fee-shifting statute that awards fees to prevailing parties.
Yes, Your Honor. The difference here is that the Equal Access to Justice Act contains an additional step that the court or a court must take in order to award fees. The statute at issue in Buchanan said that if you are a prevailing party, then fees within the discretion of the court shall be granted to the prevailing party.
So more specifically, to follow up on Judge Rovner's questions, haven't cases said there's no meaningful change in the legal relationship between the parties when the dismissal is without prejudice?
Mm-hmm. There is a case that says that. I believe the Federal Circuit has said that, and it has applied Buchanan to the Equal Access to Justice Act. In this case, there was, however, a material change in the legal relationship between the parties that was affected by the court's granting of the motion to dismiss. USA Cleaning's position is that's where one of the places where Judge McCarthy below erred. Judge McCarthy interpreted his own authority as being nothing more basically than administrative. It was a housekeeping issue, as I believe how he referred to it, when he granted the motion to dismiss the case. In point of fact, the Federal Mine Safety and Health Commission has recently held, and held in Mattiki in 1981, has recently held in North American Drillers that it's not, in fact, just a housekeeping issue, that the court would, in fact, is obligated to review the motion carefully and has the discretion, even where a case involves a vacated citation, has the obligation to, or...
You know, the
even
companies might really be better off with the government's interpretation because then it means that dismissing without prejudice is a way for the agency to insulate itself from having to pay attorney's fees, whereas if it fights the case, then it gets into it. What's unusual here is that such large attorney's fees were incurred just to convey to the agency the absurdity of what they were doing, right?
Yes, Your Honor. I mean, I think that a couple of things to keep in mind here. One, the reason that that step was taken is that the issuance of a withdrawal order means, particularly for a small company like USA Cleaning, that its employees can't work until they receive the training that's required. So in this case, it would have required the individuals to receive 24 hours of new minor training, in addition to a training plan.
What interest is SROC? SROC wants to get the mining authority off its back, right?
If I might address the real party in interest, Your Honor, issue, SROC has never been a party in this case.
No, I understand that. But SROC is paying the bills, and the reason it's paying the bills, I assume, is not only, you know, not just charity to this little cleaning service, but also to face down the mining agency. I'm sure there's no love lost between SROC and the Federal Mining Agency, right?
I would say, Your Honor, that SROC achieved that goal very early on. And SROC said to the administration, if you are going to do this, we will contest it. They chose not to cite SROC. They certainly could have. The reason that they chose not to cite SROC is that they knew that SROC had the wherewithal to contest the citation.
Not a question of citation. Right. No, well, it's a question of showing that SROC is not going to allow itself to be pushed around by its regulator, right?
And
which is fine. I'm not criticizing it.
And how many days are we talking about here?
I'm sorry, days from between the vacating
of
the...
between, you know, them being cited and them not being cited.
Your Honor, the citation, I believe it was 10 days.
10 days.
When they vacated the citation.
And how could there be, you know, this great amount of attorney's fees? I mean...
I believe that it was the total amount of attorney's fees, Your Honor, between the time of the filing of, or at least our involvement in the case, and the dismissal by the judge, I believe it was $19,000. That included, I believe, the preparation of the application for attorney's fees. That doesn't include the time that SROC was billed in order to convince the agency not to cite SROC, that the course they were taking was contrary to law.
You've just given me a reason to leave the bench.
And go to work for SROC?
But wouldn't U.S. Cleaning be giving the money from any fee award to SROC?
They may, Your Honor. They're not legally obligated
to
do so.
How could they? I mean, they didn't incur any expenses, U.S. Cleaning.
I mean,
the person that paid the bill was SROC. Why wouldn't SROC get the money?
I mean, be realistic, Mr. Hendricks. Can you imagine the little cleaning service?
Absolutely not.
Thanks. You know, we're use an extra $19,000, and you're a rich company. And no, I don't think that's the relation between these two.
No, neither do I. My only point is that in terms of a legal obligation, nowhere is that in the record. There is an obligation on SROC's part to indemnify USA Cleaning.
Right.
And that is what they have done.
Right. So they don't have to pay any money for anything because SROC will pay all the money.
They lost half their revenue for more than around 10 days.
SROC will recover the fees.
Right.
SROC will recover the fees if USA Cleaning so pays them. Yes. But in terms of real party and interest, the concern in the real party and interest cases is where you have a stand-in litigant. Here, that's not a concern at all. MSHA gets to choose the individual parties that it would like to bring to court. MSHA makes that decision. Here, MSHA easily could have cited SROC. In fact, SROC asked to be cited. Rather than cite USA Cleaning, SROC said, cite us. MSHA chose not to do so because MSHA thought it could bully the small sole proprietorship into giving up. That was MSHA's decision. Mm-hmm. SROC is not here because MSHA decided that they weren't going to bring SROC to court, that they weren't going to cite SROC.
Okay. Well, thank you, Mr. Hendricks. Mr. Lord?
May it please the Court, good morning. My name is Samuel Lord on behalf of the United States Department of Labor. Just a factual point is what I'd like to begin with.
There's this curious submission which said that the agency wasn't going to file a brief. I don't understand that. Isn't it part of the Labor Department?
No, this is a common confusion. In fact, in a recent D.C. Circuit case, they made the same error. The Federal Mine Safety and Health Review Commission is an independent adjudicatory agency, so it was counsel for that adjudicatory agency that put in the notice. I represent the United States Department of Labor and MSHA, who would be liable if an agent
would. The Justice Department usually represents agencies.
They do ordinarily, but we have independent litigating authority, and so.
But what? Okay, so how is the Secretary of Labor involved?
Because MSHA is a component agency within the Secretary of Labor, so
well,
that's my.
I just asked you, and you said no.
I
asked you whether the agency is part of the Labor Department.
The Federal Mine Safety and Health Review Commission is not. The Mine Safety and Health Administration is. The Mine Safety and Health.
Now I'm totally lost.
Sure, I can try again. The Mine Safety and Health Administration is the enforcement agency that resides within the Department of Labor. Congress established an independent adjudicatory agency, the Federal Mine Safety and Health Review Commission.
And is it the Review Commission that brought this proceeding, or?
No, it was MSHA.
Why is it a party, then?
I guess you would have to ask opposing counsel. Who
should it be a party?
Should the Federal Mine Safety and Health Review Commission?
Yes.
I don't think so because, I mean, it's hard for me to speak for them because I don't represent them, but they would not be liable for an award of fees.
Right, right. So they, right, because they're an adjudicator.
Yeah. Right.
Okay. Let me ask you another question. There are hints in your brief that, you know, maybe there's some sense in which these janitors are minors. So could you explain that?
Sure. The definition of minor is fact-intensive, and it doesn't depend on a job title or any self-serving descriptions of...
So could I be a minor?
If you were exposed to mining hazards on a regular basis...
Okay. What are the mining hazards that people are exposed... that these people are exposed to when they're... What are they doing? Are they cleaning out the bathrooms or something? What do they do?
I haven't been to this facility. I haven't seen these employees work, but I can...
janitors. I mean, they're not, you know, like people wearing masks
gear.
And gear uniforms and cleaning out toxic wastes or something, are they?
Your Honor, the record doesn't speak to whether that's true. What the record does tell us is that these janitors travel outside of the main administrative office, and they go to all the buildings where milling occurs. Is in the record.
Milling occurs. Is milling mining?
Yes. Under the Federal Mine Act, milling activities falls within our jurisdiction. So that's why we have cement facilities within our jurisdiction. The way that these...
But they don't go underneath the ground.
No, all of this facility, I'm sorry, is a surface facility.
Yeah.
So
what actually is mined? Is it just sand or what?
My understanding is it's a variety of different sands and other types of stones which are taken from the quarry.
Cement as such is not a mineral.
I'm sorry?
Cement as such is not a mineral.
No, cement is a product that is produced after you combine and send through crush.
But you're saying that somehow milling... This kind of processing has been defined as mining.
Yes, that's...
Okay, now what actually are these people doing, though, the janitors? What are they doing in these buildings that constitute the mill? They must have, you know, offices and work...
Restrooms.
What do they do? How large a staff do they have?
The record is scant on this, so most of the information we have is from the representations that are made by USA Cleaning's attorney.
So how big is the staff?
I think it's about three janitors, or three employees, if I read their representations. I'm sorry?
They're just three people working?
I don't have that information. Again, I think the record indicates there are about three employees of USA Cleaning who perform services throughout this mining facility. They're not confined to the administrative office building. And I can say one thing that MSHA, I think, was concerned about, and this is reflected in the record, is that they may have encountered mining hazards on the way to and from the different buildings. The different buildings they service include mill buildings, and also something, at least in the billing, the USA Cleaning gives
well,
that.
This is true, and these people may be exposed to hazards. Why was the commission so quick to drop its case?
The commission didn't drop the case. The Mine Safety and Health Administration dropped the case. Yes.
Right.
Well, I, this This court has spoken in its national roofing contractors decision recently quite powerfully about the problem of limited agency resources, including particularly in the Department of Labor. I believe that was an OSHA case. This was a case where we exercised...
Well, okay,
this administration doesn't learn about its money problems from us. Right?
I was just trying to say that the court has recognized this dilemma.
I see. So, in other words, when this is reported to a superior in the administration, he or she says, okay, we have limited resources. We can't waste our time with these three janitors. It's something like, that's what you're suggesting.
It was a
resource decision, not these people could be in danger, but there aren't enough of them. We don't have the resources on.
It was an exercise of prosecutorial discretion, mm-hmm. Your Honor. Right. I would like to, there was this assertion made during the opening argument that SROC would ultimately...
I suppose you want to go against Pat and Boggs, you know, who look as if they're gearing up for a really big litigation with you.
You would be deterred, you'd not want to. Yeah, well, yes, I think that the idea that a small entity can be EJIA eligible even when it's been indemnified by an interested and ineligible third party does raise the risk of some mischief and opens the door to...
Well, I don't know about mischief. What's the mischief?
The mischief would be that a large and powerful regulated entity would see this as an opportunity to put the secretary on the defensive, distract her from her enforcement duties, and carry it all the way to the Court of Appeals.
Oh, and also, you know, the publicity could be very bad. There's a lot of hostility to government regulation at the moment.
Yes.
It would be a kind of poster child for excessive regulation, right? Yeah.
If I can... state just the factual point. I think during the opening argument it was stated that SROC would ultimately receive any award of fees in this case. On page 90 of the joint appendix, the last two sentences of the footnote, it indicates that USA Cleaning will receive all fees and expenses under a positive ruling in this case and will not stand in for SROC. SROC will not receive fees. So that indication is that USA Cleaning will keep all its fees. I wanted to all the fees.
Really?
Yes, that's it. Joint appendix page 90, note 2. It's the last two sentences.
Had no expenses, but it's going to keep the fees?
That's correct.
Really,
what USA Cleaning had in this case was greater than equal access to the courts, greater than the access that Congress intended each eligible claimants in order to receive an award must show that they were prevailing party, must demonstrate that the government's position was not substantially justified, and must limit its expenses to reasonable fees. In this case, where USA Cleaning was totally indemnified by an ineligible third party, they didn't have to worry about any of that. And I also would like to...
What's the administration's position if somebody that... you sue or that, you know, have an investigation of and incurs legal expense. Suppose it's a small firm, but it has insurance, has liability insurance that covers its such a thing, so it's reimbursed. Would you regard that as disqualifying them, the fact that they were insured?
No, we would not. And there's case law, of course, in this circuit to that effect that... and that's the Thuvenot Wade decision that Your Honor issued. The insurance cases are distinguishable from this gift of legal services in at least two important ways. The first is, of course, USA Cleaning had not been prepaying for legal services in the form of insurance premiums. And also, given what I've just read, SROC has disavowed any right of subrogation. So we know that it could not have been the existence of EJIA that induced SROC to enter into this indemnification agreement. I would just like to address the prevailing party issue very briefly. The court's correct that in order to be a prevailing party, you must show a change in the legal relationship. This court has held since its 1987 decision in Sabo Food Services that dismissal without prejudice cannot convey prevailing party status because the plaintiff is always free to refile. The importance of the fact that that case was issued in 1987 was that it preceded the Buckhannon decision by 14 years. So what it shows is that USA Cleaning's argument that Buckhannon doesn't apply to EJIA is actually irrelevant. Even before Buckhannon was issued, it was still an element of prevailing party that there must have been a change in the legal relationship of the parties. If there are no further questions, I'll rest on my briefs.
Okay, thank you. Thank you very much, Mr. Moore. Mr. Hendricks, how much time? Does, 1 minute? Yeah.
Thank you, Your Honor. Real quick, I would like to address the footnote that opposing counsel referred to. I want to make it clear that SROC does expect to receive a payment from USA Cleaning should this court award a payment. It will not be receiving the full amount of its fees, I don't imagine, but it will be receiving a payment. There's no legal obligation to do so. There's no agreement regarding that. The only agreement is what SROC promised to do in writing, which is indemnify USA Cleaning. Another point I'd like to make here.
Why do you say they wouldn't return? I mean, suppose they got all 19,000. They wouldn't return all of it to you?
No, I believe they would, Your Honor.
They would.
But there
are
other fees that have been expended in the course of this litigation they will not be receiving. And
you mean the ones for
now.
Right now?
Now.
Certainly
appeals,
and before as well.
Appeals fees.
Because there wouldn't be reimbursement for these.
That's right. They're not reimbursable. Real quick, Your Honor, regarding indemnification, a point to make. The case law says that under the Equal Access to Justice Act, if an individual has pro bono counsel, that individual would not be ineligible to stand as a prevailing party. If the individual in Thuvano has a rich uncle, for example, and that rich uncle offered to pay, that individual could still move forward as a prevailing party if he otherwise qualified. In this case, what you had is a company saying, we will indemnify you to allow you to move forward. That's no different from the insurance situation or from the rich uncle situation or from a pro bono situation. In the concern, I believe, in Buckhannon and in other cases, is, again, with the stand-in litigant. Here, SROC could not have been a stand-in litigant. It was never a party. It was never a party because IMCHA chose not to make it a party. That was IMCHA's decision. Going forward, that is always going to be IMCHA's decision. They are the enforcement agency. SROC couldn't come to IMCHA, couldn't come to the Federal Mine Safety and Health Review Commission and say, we disagree with the citation that was issued to another party. SROC wouldn't have standing to do that. So it was IMCHA that brought USA Cleaning to the Federal Mine Safety and Health Review Commission.
Okay, well, thank you very much, Mr. Hendricks and Mr. Lord. And the court will be in recess.